News Radio WJPF, Southern Illinois' number one for news and talk. I was just telling us, Terry, before we went on the air, I don't know where how we're going to get it all on the air. Terry Bryant, Illinois State Representative. Morning, Terry.
Good morning, Tom. Let's just knock it out in rapid succession.
All right, so let's go back to last week. The news from the governor's office and the Illinois Department of Public Health, no American trap shooting at Sparta, and the cancellation of the DeCoin State Fair. Two things that in the press you were referred to as a kick in the gut.
Yeah, definitely it's a $20 to $30 million loss for our region just on the Grand American. And, you know, the interesting thing is the ATA sent a letter to the governor with plenty of time to sit down at the table and discuss what the needs were. And the governor's office waited until the Friday before that Monday deadline at 3:30 in the afternoon, gave the ATA until, I believe it was 12 o'clock on Sunday, to come up with a mitigation plan. The ATA submitted to the governor's office a 41-page mitigation plan, and the governor's office did not even come back with, well, let's take this out, let's put this in. And the interesting thing is in this, in the governor's denial of the ATA, in phase four of his recovery plan, I'm going to quote this, it says, allowing group sizes of up to 50 and permitting multiple groups given facilities have space to appropriately social distance and can limit interaction between groups. It goes on to say that clubhouses are permitted to reopen, concessions are permitted to reopen, and then, quote, activity stations should be at least 6 feet apart. Those things that I just mentioned to you in phase four absolutely were a part of the mitigation plan, and they were still denied. I did hear yesterday that Dr. Ezeke, who I've been beating up on a little bit, and the director of IDNR were all for having it, and Dan Hines was the guy that nixed this or told the governor, I believe, very poor information. He said it was a state activity, did not even realize or didn't even take the time to figure out that it was an ATA event on state property. So shame on them.
Now, I was told there is an additional year on the contract. When I did share that news with other people, they said, yeah, but did Illinois violate the contract this year? Will we be able to get the ATA back from Missouri next year?
Well, I think so. Actually, I think our contract goes till 2026. And the ATA, some people have said that the ATA wanted to move. That is not true. The shooting facility in Sparta was built specifically to attract the ATA to our region. And so it is designed 100% to be everything that they need. And I believe that they want to stay there. Remember that the Trap Shooting Hall of Fame is right there at the Sparta Shooting Complex. So I believe they'll be back. But listen, a $20 to $30 million loss in just the Grand American, not counting the DeCoin Fair, that is a kick in the gut and a slap in the face to all of us here in Southern Illinois.
It also lends credence to the people that accuse the governor of ruling Illinois by executive fiat.
Well, I would like to not think that he's doing this because he's being vindictive. He's a little bit angry, I think, at me, and he's angry at some of the other Southern Illinois legislators. I helped to expose the breach at IDES, and I don't think that he has liked that very much. I don't think that they have stood up to what they should be doing with that breach. I wouldn't like to think that he's being vindictive, but let's see how things go moving forward.
All right, so since you brought up the subject of the IDS data breach, there's some credence, I think additional credence, lended to your accusations because in published report, you actually used the word cover-up. Now, when it comes to this, you also have a lawsuit that has been filed against one of the companies involved, Deloitte.
Yeah, there's three lawsuits now active. I'm not sure that I should have used the word cover up because it implies that someone has information and is purposely covering it up. I use the word in the sense that I don't think that they have dug into this problem. I think they're trying to shove it under the rug per se. And there's a new twist to all of this right now. And I'm going to be calling the governor's office today and asking them some questions. I started getting emails just a couple days ago, and yesterday our phones in Murfreesboro were ringing off the hook in regard to a situation where people are sending us a note that says, we received a letter from IDES that says your unemployment has been approved. Those individuals have not only not applied for unemployment, but have never been unemployed. So somewhere there is a breach where people, where someone is getting people's Social Security numbers and are applying for unemployment under that person's name and Social Security number. So I want to make sure that the listeners know if that happens, immediately call the fraud unit at IDES. If you have trouble getting through to that number, you can call my office in Murfreesboro at 618-684-1100. And I will tell you that a whole lot of people have that phone number. Apparently someone who runs an IDES blog thought it was funny to put on their blog the Chicago phone number for IDES, the Springfield number for IDES, and then Terry Bryant's Murfreesboro office. They don't say it's my office. They say it's an IDE office, and they put that 684-1100 number on there. So my secretary, Kathy, at the Murfreesboro office is becoming quite adept at helping people maneuver through the system or getting you plugged into where you can get help. So we'll continue to do that. They might have thought it was a joke, but we take it as a compliment.
All right. Now, there's also been a call by members of the GOP for an audit of the Illinois Department of Employment Security.
Yeah, that's true. So we were hoping to get an independent audit done. I have found out since that their, I believe it's a biannual audit, actually was already in the process. So we are waiting for the Auditor General to release that audit. I do believe that there are going to be some insufficiencies at IDES that are uncovered. And I do want to say, because I have been in contact with a lot of the IDES employees, again, the rank and file, the folks that are answering the phones for you, those are people who are working their butts off, and they're being beaten up for this. This goes to the highest levels of IDES. And in fact, it goes back to what we talked about in our last call, which was the two no-bid contracts that went to Deloitte. Do you know that we have Illinois companies that were already, they actually were already doing for other states what Deloitte was called in to do? And they're, you know, Deloitte's two systems are crap. Let's just face it. We've spent $22 million on a system for the regular unemployment and for the PUA system that has left Illinoisans wondering what is going on. They're still waiting for checks. Some of them are still trying to get through. One lady made 150 phone calls to the IDES office and was not able to get through. Now, when they call, an employee who's been hired by Deloitte answers the phones, but Deloitte didn't train their people properly, so they transfer the calls over to IDES employees. So those poor IDES employees are getting beaten up at both ends while Deloitte is able to sit back with a $22 million worth of contract.
You made an oblique reference to this a couple of moments ago in Dr. Ngozi Nzike, and you have literally been using, and I'm going to use this term, you've been raising hell about IDPH and getting guidelines for long-term care facilities.
Yeah, you know, as a lot of people know, my daughter is a director of nursing at a long-term care facility. So sometimes I kind of depend on her she can't give me individual information about patients, but just in general, you know, what's going on? What are you doing at the doors? What does IDPH allow? And the fact is that the majority of residents have been shut in their rooms at long-term care facilities since early March. And I do mean shut in their rooms. Often their doors have to be closed. They're not allowed out for recreation. They don't come out for food service. In some cases, the long-term care facilities took people outside so that someone could do a parade by the facility, and later they were criticized for doing that. There was an attempt to do outside visitation where people were socially distanced. They had masks, only two family members allowed. IDPH said on Friday, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, well, that sounds reasonable. And then by Tuesday the next week, they shut it all down. That's when I raised a little bit of hell last week and said, this is ridiculous. You have got to let these people out of their rooms. Well, by Friday, they made the decision then to allow the outdoor visitations again. But what about those people who have no family, who are not going to come and visit them? Are they still stuck in their rooms? I think so. So I also asked IDPH to look at the possibility of doing in cafeteria meals, and they can make up some reasonable rules. So let's say, for instance, at 11 o'clock, and I'm just using these loosely, at 11 o'clock on Monday, five people are allowed to go to the dining room, spaced far apart, face masks on the staff. Then they go back to their rooms, and maybe at 12, another five people come out. And maybe you could do that for a couple hours, and then the following day, have a different group of people. So at least once a week, they're getting out of their rooms and being able to move around a little bit. People are literally losing their minds. Imagine being in a room the size of a small bedroom, and you have not been allowed out of that for 4 months. We're not even doing that to incarcerated individuals, but we're doing that to our most vulnerable individuals within nursing homes. You know, it is unconscionable.
It's an interesting story because I went to visit a friend of mine's mother in Carbondale at a long-term care facility before COVID-19. I got there in the morning, and she was already getting dressed for lunch and told me that this was one of her favorite times of day. She got to see the rest of her friends, and when I followed her down, went down with lunch with her, and her table filled up because that was her social event of the day. Her anchor point was lunch with her friends there from inside that assisted living facility. Speaking of COVID-19, I was looking at the comptroller's website last night. As of June 14th, total cumulative spending on COVID-19 in the state of Illinois at $619.4 million. As I was trying to, well, for lack of a better word, split hairs this morning, that's how much it's cost the that's the cost for Illinois, but it's not the price. We're paying a much higher price when it comes to lost revenues, things along that line, and then, of course, the fights over it. I had hoped to talk to Tim Schneider from the chairman of the GOP party earlier this week. I was unable to get in touch with him because I know there's another lawsuit being involved right now, and when I was talking to some of the other people in the Republican Party, I said, look, it seems to me the lawsuit becomes a moot point on Friday when we enter Phase 4, and they said, no, that's not the case.
Right, that's not the case because you still have some limits in hotels and convention centers. I believe the GOP is suing because there is a belief that as part of conversations going forward, political organizations have to be able to organize as we move into an election cycle. So you have some amount that the I'm a delegate to the Republican, I was a delegate to the Republican convention, and so I was on the Zoom meeting for that. And it was just like us trying to conduct business in the legislature. It was very important for us to be in Springfield in person. There were some bills that were bad that were ironed out. The problems were ironed out at the back of the room, where you can see, look at someone face to face. You know, I study body movement because I learned that in my 20 years in the Department of Corrections. How someone is reacting to you face to face is very important. And when political parties are not able to do that, I don't think that you can really have a good conversation going forward and have the best of our political system. So certainly the GOP is right to have that lawsuit. And honestly, if they win, it will help the Democrats as well.
All right, just a few questions that have come in. I'm not going to be able to get to all of them because I've got a huge stack. Here's one. Ask Terry when the FOID card is going to be dropped as unconstitutional, and when we can go back to constitutional carry since the law was passed after the court given time limit.
Well, that's a very good question, and I don't have an answer for you. I believe I'm at the same place as the person who's asking the questions. I think the FOID cards are unconstitutional. We file a bill every year to get rid of them. The reason I can't answer the question right now is there was a bill that was sponsored, I believe, by Kathleen Willis, who, you know, seems to carry all of the anti-gun bills. And I believe that it was passed while we were in session in May that actually fixed for the anti-gun folks, fixed the issue for them and put us in a bad position in wanting to get rid of the FOID cards. But I really don't know if the governor has signed that or if it passed in the Senate. I'll have to do a little research. Maybe I can answer that the next time I'm on.
Well, apparently somebody's listening from Chicago because I see this is a 708 listen. So thanks for listening there in Chi-Town. And the text in simply says the ATA announced yesterday they would be back in 2021. So thanks for sending that note this morning.
Absolutely.
Right? So we're happy to see that. Let's see what else we've got here in the way of questions this morning and see if we can get anything else here this morning. Canceling the ATA is a subtle attempt at gun control. I thought that's an interesting thing sent in as well this morning. Before I let you go this morning, I want to highlight something else that you've been talking about. A mobile testing unit is being brought to the campus of SIU. Is that today?
Yeah, you know what? I just got the note late last night, so I think I posted the address on that post on my social media site.
I have it.
It's right behind the, yeah, do you have it?
I do.
Can you read that?
This is, got it right here in front of me. Just got to move up a little bit on my page here, and there we are. Located at Lot 94 behind the Rec Center, Student Health Center, coordinated effort between the Governor's Office, SIUC, Jackson County Health Department. I was told the state contracted with the HR support to operate the mobile unit. Don't know the hours of operation yet, but we do know the location, as we said, Lot 94.
Yeah, I'll try to post a little bit late. I'll get a hold of IDPH this morning. I was in Chicago yesterday and didn't see that note until this morning, so I wanted to get it out to everyone. I did attend the meeting yesterday with Darren Bailey, Representative Severin, Representative Will Hauer, a couple other folks, with Willie Wilson and some a large number of African-American ministers in Chicago to try to figure out how we can understand each other better. It was at the Romanian church. You might have remembered that church as one of the ones that was closed and reopened, was fined by the city of Chicago, and Willie Wilson paid their fine. They opened their doors for us yesterday. We had a very good conversation about how people of faith can help to lead the way to understand racial issues better. It was a beautiful time to be together, and I appreciate Willie Wilson for putting that together.
Well, one of the questions just was sent to us here by the American Monument text line was, how does that meeting and that press conference with Willie Wilson, how does that help Southern Illinois?
Well, I think it helps to have the deep Southern Illinois legislators, and some of them being the ones who filed the bill to separate, or would file the bill to separate from Illinois, Chicago from Illinois, rest of Illinois, and it helps Southern Illinois because often we put ourselves in silos where I've had friends who said, it scares me to death to go to Chicago. Well, you know what? Those folks from Chicago, it scares them to death to come down here. So when we're able to sit in the same room, again, look each other in the eye and talk, not in a mob setting, in a protest setting, but across the table from each other, in the church setting, where we're able to just say, brothers and sisters, let's get this right this time. It was it helps us all. It helps us not just as Southern Illinois, but as a state, as a whole. And, you know, I used, for an instance, my skin is white. My hair is blonde right now. My eyes are green. But someone like Representative Mary Flowers is a black woman, brown eyes, Democrat from inner city Chicago. And we find a way to work together because we're face-to-face. So I think there's hope for all of Illinois. There's certainly hope for the black communities, the brown communities, and the white communities. If we're sitting down at a table and talking to each other, that's the first step.
Illinois State Representative Terry Bryant. Terry, final notes for today?
I would just say stay tuned. I try to keep my social media sites active. You're welcome to call the offices in Mount Vernon, 242-8115 or 684-1100. We are there to help you, to listen to you, and even if you're unhappy with me, I need to know it so I can do better.